Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community.
Welcome back to The Mix-Up. My name is Patrick Garmong. I am your host. I am so pleased to be welcomed today by Dan Giusti. He is the founder of Brigade. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Patrick. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to talk to you. You've got a wonderful reputation in the child nutrition world, and it really started with your journey to our world from Noma. I mean, it was one of the best restaurants in the world. What on earth propelled you to leave that level of notoriety to move into child nutrition?
You know, I think like any career, any space, I should say, there's a way that people perceive success. And in the food world, and when you cook, that's working in fine dining. So even though growing up, I got into cooking not because of fine dining. I didn't know anything about famous chefs or famous restaurants. So I didn't go out to eat a lot. Really, what we did was, for me, it was growing up in a big Italian family and being taken care of through food. And that was something that kind of propelled me into getting into cooking in the first place. And then I started working in a restaurant and I loved it. And I just liked working in a restaurant. But then I went to culinary school, and culinary school was kind of forced me to think, oh, you know, to be successful, you got to work in a restaurant. You got to work in a fine dining restaurant. So that's basically what I ended up doing for the next, I guess, 10 years, only to realize that's not why I got into cooking in the first place. Obviously, there's nothing wrong with restaurants. There's nothing wrong with fine dining, but that's not where my passion lied. And having been in Noma, it did give me the confidence to kind of look forward and say, what do I really want to do? And it didn't really have much to do with working in that type of restaurant. It had much more to do with feeding a lot of people, feeding people who needed it. And one thing that institutional food spaces provide is the kind of the ability to feed people every day in a way that you can really affect the way they're living. So that's kind of the idea started there, is like, how am I going to get into a space where I can do all those things? And then naturally the idea of institutional food and then working in the National School Lunch Program really fit that mold perfectly. I mean, feeding kids who, for whatever reason, whether it's because they genuinely need it in terms of being fed. Obviously, unfortunately, we know a lot of kids depend on these meals. Beyond that, proper nutrition. And then, of course, for them to learn. And then beyond feeding the kids, it's training the staff of people that we know. There's a lot of amazing people working in this space out there who haven't had the opportunity to be trained. And there's a lot of kitchen spaces that haven't really been organized like kitchens. And there's a lot of food being produced, and some of it's great and some of it's not great, you know. And after spending 4 years in this space, you understand why it's so challenging to make it really good. It's tough. It's a challenging thing. So the idea of getting in that space was very exciting to me. And honestly, since I left working in restaurants, people ask me all the time, like, do I want to open a restaurant? It's like, I have no interest at all in doing anything else but this, because it's an amazing space to work in. And, it's challenging, but also so rewarding. It kind of keeps you motivated on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you see the look on those children's faces, especially when they're trying things that maybe are different to them, but now they're drawn into new flavors, new experiences, new textures that they haven't been able to experience. It kind of makes it all worth it, even, you know, in those moments where there's self-doubt in this process, I think. I know I went through it when I was operating and trying to figure out what's going to work and what's not. So as you shifted gears from the restaurant world to child nutrition, obviously, you know, some of the regulatory pieces are a challenge. Mm-hmm. But when you actually stepped foot into a kitchen, what did you find to be one of the most challenging aspects of taking your vision of maybe, you know, prepackaged item or vended items into a more scratch-based sustainable system?
Yeah, you know, I think as a chef, you can understand certain constraints before you see them. You know, as a chef, you can understand, okay, we're going to have to follow nutritional guidelines. That's complicated. We're going to have to follow a budget. You can kind of have an idea how that's going to go. I will say I was very sensitive to the fact that we were going to be this outside organization going into school food programs with staff of people that have been there for some time. And obviously their willingness to listen to us and work with us. I knew that was going to be a challenge, and understandably so. I think the thing that really we lost sight of and what became the biggest challenge was we went in guns blazing, making all these meals that we thought were great, that fit the guidelines, that were, you know, within the budget, and kids weren't eating them. And right. to me, that was the biggest challenge. It still is the biggest challenge, where I think if you have disregard for the kids, you could probably come up with tons and tons of great meals that people would be like, wow, it's pretty amazing what you come up with for that price point. But obviously that doesn't matter. And we really lost sight of that. I think coming from the restaurant world, especially a place like Noma, where the customers genuinely go there to eat what you're serving. It's your vision as the chef. Whereas right. when you're working in child nutrition or institutional food settings in general, you really are feeding people. You are cooking for people, and it's about them. It's not about you anymore. And I think it was definitely a hard lesson for me. I definitely had a big ego coming into it, and you drop that very quickly and start to think about what do you need to do to make sure that you're feeding kids in a way that you feel good about, but most importantly, that they're happy about and they're enjoying it and that they feel comfortable. And so for me, it was a rude awakening in some situations where, you know, we would change everything to scratch cooking, and we're like, oh, you know, we have chefs in these schools, so we don't need to serve peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And then you see kids choosing not to eat because peanut butter and jelly sandwich is not on the menu. And it's just like this ego of like saying, oh, why do we serve this? It's like, no, well, that peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it really serves a purpose, and that there are some kids like that's the option for them, and they're going to feel comfortable eating it. And do you want them to eat that every day for the rest of their life? Of course you don't. But again, the luxury that you have in schools is you see these kids every single day for a very long period of time. It's like, you might not get to them today or this year even, but maybe next year you can get to them. But I think for me, that was the most challenging thing, of just kind of saying like, it's all about the kids. And for a lot of people, adult professionals, I think it's very hard to kind of swallow that. Like, I'm a professional chef. Like, I know what's best for these kids. Well, yeah, you might know what's good for them in terms of nutrition, and you might know what's tasty, but if the kids are not going to eat it, what are you doing? So it's trying to like toe that line. And I'd be lying to you if I said we've really figured that out. I mean, we've come up with a lot of great dishes that we like, but not, I mean, it's crazy when you come, I mean, you know, it, when you come up with a really good dish that you feel good about, everyone feels, adults feel good about, parents feel good about, the principal feels good about, and the kids enjoy it. It's like gold when you find that.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, I remember some posts you put up, I think it was about a year ago, about that peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah.
Kind of talking about how, you know, you got to connect with them in some way.
Right.
And sometimes that's the entryway, but also really what was impactful and a takeaway for me on that was how it was presented, right? It wasn't just a PB&J that was slopped together and thrown on a tray.
That's right.
The way you guys packaged it, the way it was cut, the way it was presented, so that that food, as humble as it was treated with respect by the staff producing it, and the students knew that they were being respected in the food that was being produced. And I think that's huge. And it goes into your discussion about creating a relationship. You might not get them today or tomorrow, even this year, but you do have them in your school environment for a number of years. And there's an opportunity to build that trust and growth. And I think that's such an important aspect that sometimes it's forgotten amongst any of us, right, that are working in this space, because
that's right.
We're trying to do the right thing today, and sometimes we lose the long game in it. So,
well, it's hard. Obviously, we all like to see, you know, you like to see results. You like to get gratification of the work, like today, now, you know, and tomorrow, next week. So it is, yeah, it is hard to. I mean, I would say that's probably one of the most challenging things in this space, is because by nature of working in schools and the way things are, it is a slower moving space. So it takes time. The other thing is, like, people are always like, oh, the kids change their eating habits. I'm like, people in general don't change their eating habits overnight. Like, that takes time. Yeah. It's not going to happen. People are like, oh, can you show through a study that everyone changed their eating habits? I'm like, no, we can't. Like, not yet. Like, that takes time. And you know, that's the thing, that when you have these initiatives going, of course, everyone wants to see results. And for me, we've been so focused on just like, if you go in the cafeteria and you just feel the vibe in the cafeteria, and it's like kids are eating, kids are enjoying it, kids feel comfortable, kids are happy. To me, I know it's not a very, you know, it's not a quantifiable thing and you can't put it in a statistic, but it is something you can definitely feel if you're there.
No, absolutely. And creating a safe space where the students feel welcome and and they know they're getting nourishment that actually goes into their bellies and not into the waste receptacle.
That's right. That's right.
Huge. So one of the other things I've seen that your organization has done to help draw in the community and become, you know, better community partners is hosting a Wednesday night community dinner. Obviously that's probably more pre-pandemic, right. But you know, I think it's just such a great way to connect with households and families. Oftentimes the only impression households get of the foods that are being served are either on the menu that goes home in the backpack, a menu posted online, or anecdotes from, you know, tales from the lunchroom, basically, sure. of students, you know, oh, I had a green hot dog today and it wasn't great. And so that's their impression. That's a parent's impression. So the way you all are reaching out, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to that idea and what some of the positive impacts have been from that?
Yeah, of course. You know, we started the community dinners in a town called New London, Connecticut, which is where Brigade started. It's a very small town. So you have about 25,000 people. There's about close to 4,000 kids attending school. And again, we were this outside organization. So I think from day one, it was kind of like, all right, who are these people? We hired chefs to work in the schools, to work with the school food teams, to work in the schools. And obviously doing an initiative like this costs money, and of course, budgets are tight. So one of our initial ideas was, how can we generate some revenue using what we already have? You know, we have these chefs, kitchens. That was the starting point. So then we said, okay, why don't we do like a meal? So we have a space, the space is paid for, the kitchen space is paid for, the cafeteria space is paid for. The labor was essentially paid for. So why don't we do a simple meal? And we targeted like a food cost of $2.50 and just invite the community in. And it was at the middle school. The middle school probably sat like 200 to 250 people in the cafeteria. And it was just going to be one meal, one simple meal. We'd open the doors. There would be no frills. People would come through the cafeteria line. Like, the kids come through, they'd get the meal that we were offering that week. They'd spend $5 and they'd sit down in the cafeteria, just like kids do, and they'd eat it. And it just turned into this thing pretty quickly. I would say within a couple months, where first of all, we started getting lots of people showing up. Like, initially it was like 20 people, then 30, 50, then it was like 200 people. Then it was like 300 people. And they were showing up. And I think this is an important piece. Like, when we first started, it was like, you know, I think too often people want people to attend things like this in order to support something. Well, that's right. Yeah, I get that, but there needs to be other reasons. And people were genuinely attending. This was the best deal in town. To come and get a meal like we were serving for $5 was a great value. So we set it up where people could eat in or people could take meals to go. Another thing that happened is we had people starting to say, and we didn't start this, and I don't know who the first one to do it was. It was just one of the customers that said, I'm going to buy three meals and I'm just taking one. So we had people, just because $5 is like a clean number and it's not a ton, you had people starting to donate meals. And then we had people within the community donating, I want to donate 20 meals. I'm an organization, I'm a business, I want to donate 100 meals. So then we would be set up on Wednesday nights to do this meal, and we can invite maybe people who we're not able to afford this otherwise. If people were, you know, if there was basketball practice in the gym next door, we could bring literally 60 kids over and just say, hey, have a, you know, dinner tonight. And it became this thing where, like, you had all these people from different parts of the community just sitting in the cafeteria together, eating, no frills, like I said, just a school cafeteria. And, you know, the mayor would come to the town, because I feel like he had to come, because it was like that. And it was just, the thing I was always amazed by, a couple of things. One, we had no options on the menu, and there's no ways to customize anything. You know, it was one meal and no one cared. People just came in and they ate it and they loved it. So you had people from the community getting exposed to new foods that otherwise they might not have tried. You had kids bringing in their parents saying, like, hey, let's go to our school and eat. So now they're in the cafeteria line together. They're getting to know our team. We're there. Right. They're sitting in the cafeteria. Now the kids are like, man, my parents come and eat in the cafeteria on Wednesday nights. Cafeteria starts to become a bit of a different place. And in general, it was just a lot of goodwill towards the community. And it really helped us in terms of the community saying, wow, this program that's happening here makes a lot of sense. And then in turn, you know, of course, we're Brigade, we're an outside team. The most important thing is that they support the food service program in the school district. And that's what happened. They said, okay, you're Brigade. Well, who are you? Well, we're outside chefs. We work with this team of people. They're doing this every day. They're feeding your kids. And then it all comes together and it just creates, you know, here we are. This is, will actually be our fifth. This is our fifth year. And the community is really supporting the program. And it's amazing to see that, because you could see how that could drop off over time. And honestly, things like a community meal, it just brings people together and they understand what's happening.
What has been some of the feedback from faculty and staff within the district? Sometimes they can, and you know, just from a lack of understanding, be a barrier to those things. Oh, it's a, we got to keep things open later. There's more custodial costs involved, or, you know, oh, do I have to attend this now? That's an extra thing I have to do. And, you know, and it's not to begrudge them. It's just, you know, their plates are full too. So how is that received, you know, and how did you bridge that gap in breaking down perception of extra work into, hey, this really benefits the whole, school district environment?
Yeah, I think, you know, I could answer the same answer for really everything we did in schools in terms of, you know, everything you do is extra. You know, if the school's running away, it's running, and then you show up and you're going to say, we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. It's going to affect a lot of people in their days. And that's something I feel like we also lost sight of from day one. And then we quickly understood that that can't happen. But in terms of the community meals, I feel like we were willing to do all the work, first of all. We said, can you just keep the school open? And okay, we'll clean up. We'll do whatever it takes. I mean, of course, it still did require, yes, you needed to, you know, someone needed to lock up, whatever it needed to be. But in general, it was a pretty easy thing. We're like, we'll do everything. Just allow us to be in the space.
Yeah.
And then once they saw that people were coming and that it was successful, then it becomes easy. I think if you're willing to do the work up front and not really need anyone else, if you will, and you can prove there's some success and there is a desire from the community, then people are much more on board to do these things. And I think, no question, when we first started, it was like, maybe not even the idea of more work, maybe being a bit nervous, like we're opening the school up on a Wednesday and it's the public just walking into a school on a Wednesday night. Like,
right.
What does that mean? And who's going to be there to make sure people aren't just wandering around the schools? And so there's definitely things that need to be taken care of. But I think if you're willing to do the work in the beginning and have a plan, and we were organized, and, you know, it quickly became successful enough that I think they were like, we need to keep doing this. And it became a thing that when we didn't do it for whatever reason, if it snowed or something like that, people were really disappointed. And there's actually people on our Facebook page who literally every week since during the pandemic are like, we having a community meal? It's like, no, we can't have one yet.
You can only imagine. I know some of our listeners are probably wondering, like, how many of those recipes or food items that you used during the community meals were items that you were also using in your lunch program. And to piggyback on that, did you ever utilize that space as a place to kind of do some recipe testing or pilot some different recipes to get
feedback? Yeah, I was just going to say that there was a lot of crossover in that sense. I would say it was kind of the other way around, where we would do things because we were targeting 250 for the meals. That complete meal was basically usually a protein, starch, a vegetable, and then just a full dessert and some kind of beverage we would put together.
Yeah.
So a lot of the components within those meals were within range for the most part of something we could actually offer in a school. So it really was a bit of a starting point for some of the dishes we did. We didn't, for the meals at night, for some of them, we generally tried to make them. I mean, when I say generally, we definitely tried to make them on the healthy side. We didn't follow nutritional guidelines for the meals at night, to try to really just drum up interest. But there definitely were meals that we took from the menus we were serving in schools and served them at night. And we usually wouldn't even, to be honest, we wouldn't even say anything.
Right.
And sometimes after the fact, people would taste them and be like, yeah, we actually serve this. Or like kids would be like, yeah, we eat this in school. This is a meal we serve in school. I would say also one idea that one of our chefs has at the moment is using that space as a space for training. Because it's a little more like there's a little more freedom in terms of cooking and things like that. So structuring something where you could bring school food staff through who were into it. To spend, you know, 2 hours to just cook food, go through different techniques and things like that. I think there's a lot of potential. If you're going to do it, if you're going to open the kitchen up and people are going to be cooking, you might as well not only use it to develop recipes, but also to develop the staff as well. I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you're working in that space where you're not having to worry so much about the compliance issues, you right. really can be more technique driven, right? So you can explain, you know, okay, so we're gonna sear this chicken thigh that's got skin on it, and you know, we're gonna use a little more fat than maybe we used before, just to really, you know, get that Maillard reaction going. So they understand the concept. So when they go and apply it later, they're like, oh yeah, okay, we did this and maybe we're gonna use a little less fat, but I remember what that brownie effect looked like. So maybe I could do it a little bit longer
that's right.
at that level there. So that's a great tool. Yeah, it kind of, it's interesting you kind of segue it into the staff training piece, because I was gonna head there next. So, you know, coming in, we've kind of talked about the students and the community and the school district environment, and you know, you coming in as these different entities than they're used to. The real impact, I'm sure, happened with the staff that had, you know, most of your school nutrition staff, you've got folks that have been there for 15, 20, 30 right. plus years that have done it a very similar way for a long time.
Right.
And now you're asking them to almost unlearn everything they've learned in terms of cooking and reapply sound technique.
Yeah.
How did that go over?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I think there's no question going into it, like I said before, I was focused on this. Like, I knew it was going to be a bit of a hurdle in terms of, we're an outside organization. These folks have been here. Why should they be excited to listen to us? When we first went in, we were very much like, this is the kind of menu we want to serve in any school we go into. Therefore, this is the type of kitchen that needs to be equipped and so on. We quickly got away from that, realizing that every school is different and there's different starting everywhere.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning too, we were so quick to want to just change stuff. Like, we're going to cook from scratch. Whereas now it's like, okay, like, let's meet people where they're at. And if you're cooking, you know, French fries in the oven, how are you doing it? Are you doing it correctly? Could you spread these out more? And really just like, taking everything that's currently, instead of just saying like, okay, day one, we're going to just change everything. It's like, show up. This is what's happening here. And it's like, all right, let's start to address certain things. In the beginning, I think it was really a fast pace, and we were very abrupt in terms of changes we were making. And that can be overburdening on the staff. And it can also be overwhelming for the students, you know, all of a sudden all the food changes. Even if the kids were not previously thrilled about the food, just because you're making tons of changes doesn't mean they're going to be thrilled about the food either. Now,
right.
at least before, they knew what they were getting. And now you're putting all these new things out there all of a sudden. So I think it really, in terms of staff training, I think, first of all, obviously, whoever's doing it, that's maybe the most important piece. What kind
yeah,
of person,
absolutely.
You know, that's, I think, what I put most stress on in terms of our work and our company is who we find to do this work. And you know, I think we've met plenty of chefs that are amazing who could do the work aspect of it relatively easily, but maybe aren't the exact right people you want to introduce into a school food environment where you have folks who've been there for 15, 20 years, who've been doing it the same way for a long time. But at the same time, we've also had people who are super friendly and they're great and they're charismatic. And in terms of the people aspect of the job, amazing, but it's a real kitchen that takes real, you know, skill and experience to manage. So really finding that right person who can manage that work, who can work with the team, who can be patient, who can be very energetic, be very positive all the time, come back every day and be positive. I think that's the most important part. And then beyond that, again, just, I think being consistent and having a plan. I think when everybody knows kind of what's happening and why it's happening, it works. And if they don't know why it's happening, then it doesn't work. And I think, you know, those days where you change the menu and you basically ask the staff of people to do that much more work that day and that much more cleanup, and then the kids didn't like the food anyway, it's really problematic. And I think it's so yes. important to be just really on the same page with everyone. Like, look, we're going to work on this. We're going to do this today. We know it's a bit of a, maybe we know it's a bit of a challenging one in terms of, we'll see how the kids go with it. But if you just leave it out there and you're kind of just oh yeah, we're just going to change everything and the kids are going to love it, and you're not realistic about things, I think the staff can get pretty like, they're like, what's going on here? Because I think the one thing we always harness is that one thing I always see is that they genuinely believe in feeding the kids. That's what they want to do. That's why they're there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So if they see that the extra work that's going into this is benefiting the kids and the kids are happy, then they're all for it. So I think we've gotten better in terms of knowing what to serve and trying to do things in a way that, you know, kids enjoy the food, therefore the staff is happy. But I also think the other thing that's allowed us to be successful is, as much as some of the systems and protocols and procedures we've implemented initially require a little more work, they initially hold everyone a little more accountable, I think the staff always comes around to seeing that it actually makes for a much better working environment. It makes their job generally easier over time. The right. First changes are a little uncomfortable maybe, but once they get there, we've seen it. People are like, this is great. The kitchen's always clean. It's always organized. I like working here, you know? So I think it's a little bit of persistence, but I also think if you're consistent, you're organized, and you have the right person kind of, again, just being the face of it and being patient, and I think you can have a lot of success.
Yeah, no, I mean, you talk about the organization. I've seen some of your postings on online and on social media, just walking into a walk-in cooler and everything's labeled. It's right. Clear containers. It's set up in a fashion that it does make it easier. It's a little more work to transfer everything. But in the end, when you go to get your ingredients out to start prepping them or to execute a recipe, you know where everything's at. It's clean.
Right.
It's ready to go. And there's a feeling of pride when you walk into when you're working in a space that is clean and organized like that. And you're not in the back of the freezer digging right. for a random box with, you know, frost covered product.
That's right.
So yeah, no, I mean, there's an initial, there's some growing pains, I guess is the best way to put it.
And yeah,
it does prove itself. So when you started, correct me if I'm mistaken, but pretty much every single one of your schools has a chef embedded at the site, or that's kind of the general model?
Yeah, it's a little, so when we first started, we've done things a variety of ways. In New London, we went in, we hired chefs we had a brigade chef there. And then with the district, we hired chefs who ultimately worked for the district in each school. We've also executed things on a training model basis where we put a chef who would move around from school to school in like over a finite period of time. So it's different models. I mean, our goal is basically whatever makes sense for the school for a variety of reasons, primarily financially, depending on the size of a school district, obviously, like it's too cost prohibitive, not even on their end. I mean, in the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve the same thing. So it doesn't make sense for us to charge a school district more than we think they should be charged, because we know it's coming from the same pot of money to make the food good. Right. So it's like we're very much involved with everything in the sense of like, we know kind of where the financial piece is at in terms of their program. And we're like, well, we think this makes sense for you. Maybe it's like we're going to be working with a very small school district this year. It's just two schools. And it's like the idea of going in, they are outsourcing their program now, and they want to bring it in house. And we're just going to kind of help them build it. We're going to help them hire a few people, and then that's it, because that makes the most sense. They're very small, and there's no place to really pay us perpetually. So it's always trying to set people up for the thing that makes the most sense. We've also in New London, actually this year, again, this is our fifth year. This has always been our ultimate goal, is one of the food service managers who's been there for, I think she's been there for 9 years. We had a chef position come available, and she applied for it and she got the job. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And that's, to me, that's like, ultimate situation. That's what we want. Right. You know, the idea of going into places and always hiring people from the outside. And people have always asked us, they've always been like, well, why don't you hire from the inside? We're definitely down for it. It's just a matter of making sure people have the skill set to do it. And, you know, in New London, we've been there for a few years. There's a lot of folks who had more of a traditional school food background, but have learned quite a bit in the past few years and are more than capable now to take on those roles. So that's something we're looking to do as well. Anytime that we can just move people up within, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it turns it from more than just a job into a career, right? And these are careers.
Right.
you know, and I think oftentimes the outside just looks at cafeteria staff as like, oh, it's just their job. I mean, that's their career. I mean, people that made 30, 40 year careers working in child nutrition,
right?
If you're creating career paths where they can start taking their skills and developing themselves more, you know, to work up into, you know, the higher levels of the organization, that just, it increases morale, it increases right. productivity, it increases a desire to do and achieve more. So
right.
I love that model. Do you have any like anecdotes of like a good story about, you know, maybe a reluctant training moment that turned out to be a really positive outcome?
Well, I mean,
you on the spot here a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, like there's probably tons. Something that comes to mind immediately, and it's not really a long story, but this woman, Tina, I'm speaking of, who became, she became the chef.
Yeah.
She was literally the first school food worker I ever really had like interaction with when I started in New London. And she was so skeptical of me and why we were there. And she was very clear to tell me that, like, without knowing anything, she was like, I'm a little like, I don't know what's going on here and what you have going on here. So for me, it's such like a, it's so rewarding to see that not only has she got this job that she, you know, now is great for her and it's great for the school district, but that she stuck with it the whole time. And like, we were able to manage that relationship together. Like, definitely rocky moments where as a company and as a group, I don't think we completely understood what needed to happen in these schools. Like I said, if we go into a school and want to change everything overnight, make everything scratch cooking overnight, anybody who knows anything about school food would know that's going to be a problem. It's going to be difficult. It's going to cause people to be upset and frustrated. And, you know, we realized that quickly. I mean, we were very receptive to any feedback we got, but the fact that all these, like, we retained everyone in New London, everyone in New London stayed. And the fact that they're all there and some of them, I mean, the majority of them have moved up in some capacity. Tina has, you know, moved up to this position of chef, which is amazing. But I think like, I don't know if I have any super specific stories, but definitely a number of stories where like, it's just so fascinating to be in these schools and you lose sight. You just don't, I think if you're not paying attention, like for example, like when we first started in schools, one thing that I didn't even think much of was again, these sandwiches. You know, you said saw my post in the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like that was something that we didn't even, like I talk about all the time is like, everything's the same. If you make a sandwich, you make some fancy meal, it's all the same. It's like what you put into it. But when we went into the schools, like you just see in each school, there was one person who like, really, that's what they were doing. Like if they made the sandwiches, they were putting so much care into the sandwiches. And it was like, even to the point where it was like, well, if you had a loaf of bread and it was like, well, you know, it tapers at the end. So we're going to match this piece of bread with this piece of bread and this side up versus that side down and making sure you have a clean knife and you cut it and how you wrap it. If it's too tight, it's squished. If it's too loose, it looks sloppy. Like there were people doing this already. And I think for me, it was such a fascinating thing because I think when you go into one of these spaces as a professional and you're a professional chef and you go into a school kitchen, you are under the idea that you're going to be teaching people everything. And you're also going to be changing the way people think about food, the way they think about everything. And I'll be honest, like, I think during this whole time period, I think differently about food than anyone that we've had contact with, because I've seen a lot and I've learned a lot. And like going to a school and seeing someone who's been there for 10 years, make 200 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and they look beautiful and they're wrapped perfectly. And there's so much pride that's been taken into them is something that, like, I needed to see someone doing that for me to be like, okay, well, everyone needs to do that. I don't know if I would have put that much stress on it, honestly. I don't know if I would have.
Right.
But like, when you see it, you're like, wow, like that's how it should be always.
Yeah.
And I just think, I know that doesn't entirely answer your question, but I just think it is something worth saying that as a professional chef and as, you know, this idea of trying to get more professional chefs into these spaces, we are so much inclined to think that we are going to be the ones that are going to kind of just teach everyone everything. And we're going to be the ones that aren't maybe necessarily learning, but there is so much to learn.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the staff that I had in, I've worked in a variety of different food service spaces, and the staff that was most prideful of the work they did between restaurants, university, business dining, it was child nutrition staff. I mean, they really cared about what they were doing every single day. And I think more so, you know, they're not just going through the motion. Like they really, they get invested in the students that they see every day. They get invested in making sure that they have a clean, they take pride in knowing that their kitchens are the cleanest kitchens in the county. Like beyond a shadow of a doubt, they knew that the health inspector could walk in anytime and everything was going to be perfect. And they care. So like when I started introducing items like raw chicken, you know, roasted chicken legs, they're like, ooh, well, you know, is that going to work in our kitchen? And here's how we do it. But, you know, it's about educating each other through the process as well.
Sure.
And I learned my first year in child nutrition, I learned way more from my staff than they probably learned from me.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a different space. So I think you're absolutely right. It is so important to, you know, start incrementally in making those changes. Everyone's got the rip off the Band-Aid vision, but I really don't, it really doesn't matter where you are unless it's your own restaurant and you're starting all over from scratch, hiring a whole new team. Right. It's going to take time to walk into any space and get people to want to share your vision and move towards it.
That's right.
So if you were to have a conversation with Randy John, the nutrition director, and they said, hey, we've got this, you know, prefab model, and obviously, you know, models are going to look different across the scope. So, know that I understand that asking this question, but, and they're like, what is one area that I should focus on early on in terms of training my staff to start moving towards a scratch-based cooking model? What would you recommend to be the first line of attack, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, and when we started doing this almost to a fault now, but we're so focused on when we first go into schools is really just looking at everything, just taking an account of, okay, what's here, what equipment's here, what space is here. Then from there, kind of put that in conjunction with like, what are you trying to do? Like what are you trying to get to here? And like, what's realistic in terms of like, what kind of space and equipment do you have? And where can that take you in terms of food? You know, are you in a position to bring in fresh fruits and vegetables? Do you have the space to store it? Do you not? Those kinds of things. Obviously, certain things are always affordable, but other things are not. If you do not have a walk-in refrigerator and you don't have a space to put one, obviously that's going to dictate what the menu is going to be. So like, that's usually where we start. And then once you have an idea of kind of where you want to go, where is the food now? Where do you want to go with the food? And what might you need from an infrastructure perspective to do that?
Right.
And then what's realistic? So it's like, and maybe that's a phased process. Maybe that's like, okay, well, this year we're going to do this and next year we're going to do that in terms of we need this piece of equipment and we have space for it. But in the beginning, it might just be getting like one thing we always see that most kitchens need are just like small wares. You know, if you're not cooking and then you start cooking, it's like containers, Lexan containers. It's this, it's that, it's tools. So really just setting up the space per what you think is achievable based on your infrastructure and what's realistic. And then I think from there, beyond the physical aspect of the space is like getting it super clean, getting it organized, making sure signage is intact, making sure procedures, protocols. I guess what I'm getting at is there's a lot of things, in my opinion, that nobody really wants to talk about because it's not so exciting.
Yeah, it's not sexy to talk about SOPs, right?
People want to talk about cooking, you know, like, talk about like, man, this is, look how organized this kitchen is and look at the labeling. But, you know, I think any chef would say like, you know, that's such an important step to get to these places. So I think for me, that's where I would start. And then from there, it's like, honestly, some of the most impactful things we've done in schools have been like cutting fresh fruit instead of serving canned fruit. And like so many kids love the fresh fruit, or just serving, you know, you go from serving whole fruit to serving cut fruit, and serving cut fruit every day is a big task. And, you know, people say, oh, well, why can't you just serve cut fruit? Well, cutting, you know, 800 portions of fruit in one school is a lot. And it's like, do you have proper knives to do that? Are the knives sharp? Do you have cutting boards to do that? Do you have a place to store the fruit when it arrives? Do you have a place to store the fruit once it's cut? I mean, there's all these things that need to be sorted out. But like just simple stuff like that, I think there's a place to start. I think when school food directors particularly hear the idea of scratch cooking, everybody's got this idea that to like jump to this place. And it's like, no, like just start bringing in different products. I mean, I think that's the starting point. I think it's also like looking at what you're purchasing and saying like, you know, for example, like I always brought this idea up when we first started in New London, they had muffins on the menu. They were muffins, frozen muffins. So the muffins in a bag, and they were getting served often, like just thawed, like they were still like very cold.
A little toothsome to the middle.
Yeah. And because they were outside of the cooler, they were starting to condensate in the inside of the bag. So they were muffins that were cold and wet. They were in a bag. They were on usually a sheet tray, you know, not like an appealing looking sheet tray. And then we went from that to scratch cooking the muffins. Now we did it and we made it happen, but there's like a million steps in between that could happen to make that just a better situation. And it's like, that's where I think we made a lot of mistakes, where we always felt the need to go from like 1 to 10 every time. It's like, sometimes it doesn't make sense. And then what you find is too, like you start making things from scratch just to do it, when you probably could buy something that's better, it's a better product and it's not scratch, and you can use that time, because we all know time and money is limited in this space, to do something that's more impactful. We've done that many times where we went from something that was like heat and serve or a product that we were purchasing to scratch just to do it, so we could say we're scratch cooking it, only to realize it never made sense to do that because the product was not consistent. The quality wasn't even as high. So I think, you know, that's the other thing, is just having confidence and looking what really, really looking at what you're already doing and seeing where you can go from there.
Absolutely. That's an important fact you bring up too, is you need to identify where there are missteps or, you know, be humble about the fact that, yeah, maybe we're not doing this scratch, like, you know, like getting a frozen pizza crust versus making your own dough. I mean, pizza dough can be very temperamental, and even that's, when you got honestly, the right.
That's one thing you bring up that example. I mean, within our team, that's something very specifically, like we started making pizza dough from scratch day one. And in New London, I will say, like, it's been happening there, and like, it's really cool to go to the school, and like, everyone knows what they need to do and they do it really well. But for a while I was like, should we get like work with maybe like a contact company that could make it, they could, you know, bring in frozen fresh dough that proofs on site, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think the key to all this stuff though, is that you're always just kind of scrutinizing it and just trying to say to yourself, you're not just doing something just to do it.
Right.
You know, I don't want to stand here and say, well, it's better to do this from scratch or it's not, whatever. It's different everywhere.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of implications too. Like, I'd argue even when the dough wasn't that consistent in New London, it was a great process for the staff that they actually very much enjoyed and they were proud of. So obviously that's a huge win. So you do it, keep doing it, but you know, it's just this idea of like scratch cooking versus not scratch cooking. We always want to talk about, and that's another place where we really have departed from. When we first started, it was like, everything needs to be scratch cooking. That's what we're going to do. And it's like, well, first of all, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. You can scratch cook things and it can be bad. You can scratch cook things. One thing I think is always funny is people are talking about scratch cooking in conjunction with healthy. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're scratch cooking, you are choosing your ingredients and you are working from whole ingredients. So you do have more of an opportunity to control what's in the food you're serving. But just because it's scratch cooking doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. And that's something that, you know, there's all these correlations between scratch cooking and being better. And it's like, you could also scratch cook in a way that's just really poorly done. And not only is it poorly done, but your staff has been put in a place where they're very much strained to do it. And they know that it's not being done very well. So it's just, you know, it's putting together a program, I think, that really makes sense. And I think within the current constraints of the National School Lunch Program, I really do feel that that is a combination of meals that are being completely cooked from scratch and bringing in other items that are not, you know, and I think it's a combination of those. I think the realistic idea of everything being cooked from scratch at the moment maybe doesn't make a ton of sense at the moment. I mean, if you really look at it in terms of being able to execute it, being able to afford it, and also serving foods that kids will eat and enjoy. There are certain things that I feel like cereal, for example, like,
right.
We've tried to buy like bulk cereals, like Cheerios and Chex, and like coat them in honey and roast them and put them in a container. Kids don't want it. They want like Cheerios in a box that's labeled Cheerios. Like that's right. What they want. So like, I think you got to put it together, and no one's going to be able to tell anyone else. You know, if you're from the outside, like you can't tell a community like how they should be feeding their kids. Like that community is always going to be the best suited to understand what's best for them, you know?
Yeah. So how much, out of curiosity, how much staff buy-in when you guys start implementing new recipes? Do you have like a pre-production meeting or pre-menu meeting to sit down and say, hey, this is what we're looking at? And kind of walk them through it, or is it a little out of the frying pan into the fire, or kind of a hybrid?
It's pretty gradual. I mean, usually we spend, if let's say we had a breakdown going from cleaning the kitchen until cooking something, it could be like a 40-day process, you know, where it's just kind of like you're in there and you're working with them, and it's like generally kind of keeping everything a little more organized, keeping things a little cleaner. Some spaces that were like not good spaces have been transformed. You know, that one closet that's just like filled with stuff that people don't, like the coffee machines that have been in there for like 10 years, with like 8 of them in there. And it's like, So I think you set the tone, getting things organized, getting things clean, how to store things properly. And then, yeah, it is. There's, you know, before every day, if something's happening that day, if it's the menu, if the menu's changing, the new preparations are changing, it is addressed. And it's like, all right, we're going to do this today. But I mean, for what it's worth, all the training we do is during the course of the workday. So, you know, you have to be quick, right. And you have to be, there's not a ton of time. And obviously transitioning a program from primarily heat serve to more scratch cooking requires more labor hours as well. I mean, if your schedule is primarily folks, you know, you have one or two people in each kitchen, maybe working full time, and then 5 or 6 working 3-4 hours a day, it becomes very challenging to address any kinds of changes. So there's no question that if you get to that point where you're cooking more, more people are there longer, and they have to be kept aware of the plan. I will say that in New London, for example, again, where it's the best example, I think, of what we're trying to get to where we work is, if you go into a school in New London, the recipes for the whole week, scaled, they're already scaled, ready to go. The menu forecasting has been done. They're printed out and they're on a bulletin board. So if you go into a school in New London on a Monday, all the recipes are there through Friday, because I think that's also one of the big differences when you start scratch cooking is that in most schools, the food is a one-day process. You show up, you cook the food, and you serve it. You know, I think when people are used to working in restaurants, like we have multiple things that are multiple-day processes. And I think that's the type of thing that you really need to be organized for, and a lot of staff and kitchens aren't used to the idea of, like, we're making this for tomorrow, or if we're doing pizza dough, we're starting this, it's Thursday, we're starting this for Monday. Like, how is this going to happen?
Yeah.
That's something. So there has to be obviously a lot of communication, but I think, you know, at some point you just got to do it. And I think what we have found is, like, staffs, they're great. And as long as you're there to set them up for success with, you know, I think one thing we always find is, like, you got to make sure they have proper equipment. If you're going to ask them to do all this stuff, are they set up properly to do it? If they're set up properly to do it, you're there to help them, you're there to guide them. Then I think it works, but I think the communication piece is so important that everyone understands what's happening, for sure.
Awesome. Well, Chef, I cannot thank you enough. I've learned a lot today, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
It's been great to connect. Well, tune in next month, and we can continue talking to child nutrition professionals from around the nation on some great culinary training tips, techniques, and how they've changed their programs over.
Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitney Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.